Accession number 31299, reel 4.
The horrible things. We used to even see Germans at times, you know. That was a part, worrying part of it. You could almost see them. We were only less than 100 yards apart. But, I don't know, there was one time when they came over and all the shooting stopped. I forget where that was. And we got took the injured away. They took theirs and we took ours. Injured. And it was just a break for sort of half an hour or so. But a lot of people, I mean, died, and I don't know. I wonder how many are alive now or with me. Because the average when we came off Anzio, that all the units, the whole of the units on there, had all lost about 40% of their men. It was grim sometimes. Mind you, General Mark Clark was the cause of a lot of the Americans getting killed. He was a nutcase. And our general at the time, I can never remember, he was a clergyman's son, and when he did for France, he did the outside, he led on the outside of the thing. But he was very nearly as bad. He used to send people in unnecessary.
How did that affect the morale of the troops on the ground?
Well, it upset a few, but Mark Clark didn't worry us so much because we didn't realise. But we used to say, well, why do they do it? But they come along. But our Colonel Baird, I mean, I'm not kidding, we'd be in a place as deep as this, down there, and he'd walk across with the brigadier. Him and the brigadier used to walk across, keep your heads down, and there's him walking along the top. He used to amaze us. But I forget where it was, but he went forward one time. I know B Company was in trouble. And anyway, he came back. Him and they used to do it quite often, the brigadier and him used to go forward. And he came back and he said, that's gorgeous. He said, it's wonderful. He said, they're murdering them, sort of business. He said, come and have a drink. And he brought out a bottle of whiskey and emptied it, and we all had a whiskey. I don't know, he always had drink. And I think when people say he died in 47 in Israel, where he was sent to, because that broke his heart when he was sent away after we came off Anzio. And whether he died of broken heart or what, but he loved war. He thought it was the finest blood sport in the world, and he'd tell you that. He said, it's marvellous, he said. He really enjoyed it. I think him and the brigadier were mates or something. They used to, all be walking about in top of you and front of you. Because, admittedly, I wasn't always in the front line. I was just behind. Of course, I was in charge of the line laying. I had to make sure it kept repaired, and God knows what. I always wondered how if their line broke, they must have wireless back or something to say that they got no connection. You'd have to go out, and of course you had to find the line, run your hand along it till you come to the break, and then find the other side. That was the trouble. It was a bit, but you always had enough stuff with you. But join the line, and we used to do line joining, making ever so very neat years ago. But when you made one in action, I mean, it was a bit different. But it was never short of a roll of insulation tape. Always had one of those on me. In lots of ways, I enjoyed the life. I mean, you got just so used to it that you made the best of it, I suppose. But it really was, bloody marvellous.
You mentioned that one of the sergeant majors was...
Pardon?
You mentioned that one of the sergeant majors was...
He was, I can't remember his name, though. He wasn't actually one of ours, but one of our near to us, but I did know his name, but that's years ago. But he was a brute. He was one of those really nasty. Not when you're in the line. He used to keep rather quiet then, but it was what he did outside when you were sort of at rest and that. And he'd go round apparently telling these people all the time that they got to do this and they got to do that and why haven't you done that? Whereas there was one occasion when we went back and my second in command who used to, he was the Lance Corporal with me, he used to do the lines and when I didn't, he did them sort of thing. And he was out on the line and they'd all gone back for rest. And I didn't go back with him because I knew he was coming in and I thought I'd wait for him and whoever he was with. There was two of them. And of course we were late. It was about 4 o'clock in the morning when we got back to where they were all sleeping. So he said, what's it in the morning? He said, why aren't you shaved? I said, where can I shave? I didn't get here till 4 o'clock. Of course, the other man. He said, oh, he said, what were you doing? I said, waiting for my second in command, my mate. He said, oh. He never said another word after that. He kept very quiet. I don't know why. But he went into the London Scottish, actually. He carried on there. Lenny Hunt, he came from Walthamstow, and his father was a hairdresser. I do know that. Len Hunt, he was my last. He was a corporal later on in the London Scottish, and I think because when I was living in a prefab in Windsor, and apparently he turned up with his wife one day, and I was at work. But he went, and my wife stayed with my wife for a little while. But of course, I was at work, and I was somewhere, probably gone through where he lived, Walthamstow, because I often used to drive through there with the coach. But I wouldn't be back till the latest one was 2 o'clock in the morning. The latest coach came in, but it was a rather life when you think of coach driving. One week you were up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and various times after that, and another week you don't come in till 2 o'clock in the morning, the last coach in. Because at Windsor, we used to have 7 coach, different places it went to. It went through Walthamstow, one of them actually. And I've done your turn, I got up one day driving, and I was going in North London, and I came up and you turned along by the zoo. And when I get along there, there's a sign that says diversion, and we were all following it. I've been cars, everything following. Anyway, went along, and somebody had got a sign and stuck it in the wrong place, and I finished up way along. Anyway, I got further up and I contacted somebody anyway, and another unit was placed there, and I said, he said, you got caught as well. And he said, well, look, you go down there, you turn there, you go along there, and then eventually you'll come straight back on, and you said you'll turn left and you can go on your journey. So I do all this blooming journey round. Eventually, I was on my land and carried on going up to
How did we get to the coach from Grigliano?
Oh, well, all sorts of... I wonder.
Off the track here, Dad.
What happened to you after the Anzio campaign?
Anzio, well, we left Anzio, and that was, there was still, incidentally, there was, I'll tell you, there was a, Germans used to shell Anzio regularly, but they were miles away, but if you, the front line was the safest place, because you heard this shell go over, and then it had a booster, and that all used to land down in Anzio, but you could, be up on the front line, and they say, "Oh, another one for Anzio, another one for Anzio," and they used to do a fleet on, and they used to land in the, but for some unknown reason, most of them landed in the water. And there were people in Anzio who were a bloody nuisance. They were people writing books and things. They were covering the war. No, I forget his name now, and he wrote, about a fact, I've got his book at home somewhere, I believe. What was his name now? And he used to, he was deadly. They used to jump in a car and go all over the place. And he went, where did he go? He went, he wrote a book and about it, and it was all about himself. Now, what was he doing, going in to enemy lines, more or less, in a car on his own? He never had, nobody with him, but of course, there was, in this villa in Anzio, they used to be up at the top. There was about eight of them, I believe, altogether. But this book, he did it all on his own. And he got the... He was given something when he got there, and they handed all this over to him, and then he handed it back in. I often wonder whether he did. I had it all, but the bank or something, all a load of money. I forget his name now. God, might be in there.
Where did you go after Anzio?
I went back to Egypt. Egypt and changed. I suppose we spent time locally in different places. We all went back.
But you went back to Anzio to Egypt because they broke the regiment up.
But see, Anzio, we went back. Then eventually we joined. Well, as I say, I joined the. Royal Corps of Signals. We had a big dinner in Cairo, and big booze up it was anyway. There's all you can see is rows of tables and blokes, and we had to go because we were the London Scottish were the first London Scottish, and the London Irish were the first London Irish. Territorial units, really, but they couldn't be broken up. We had to be broken up, so a lot of them went into the London Scottish. Some went into the London Irish, and I eventually went into the Royal Corps of Signals. But I was crafty in a way. I suppose I got a nice little job, and they treated me. They thought, he's a mug. Give him a nice little van. But what I was doing at one time was going from the one side of Italy, taking people on leave to the main town.
To
Rome, taking them on leave. Coming back again, stay there the night, drive all the way back. Sometimes I had somebody to bring back, sometimes I didn't. And then I was halfway back, and one night, what did I do? Me used to have a thing across the top of the engine for the water, and that split underneath. So anyway, I got along, which fortunately, being that top one went, I didn't lose my water in the actual radiator. I only lost what was on top. I got under the two clips, rolled it round, got some fortunately being signals, had loads of insulation tape, wound it all round, and got it going again. And as I got along somewhere, I found some water and topped it all up so that I was okay. And I drove back in. I was a bit late getting back, apparently. And they said, "Where you been?" I said, "Well, I said I've had a bit of trouble one more time." "Cord, why didn't you let us know?" I said, "How can I let you know? That what they would have wanted me, if I'd had a radio, I could have, they'd have come out and fetched me, sort of thing. They wanted to run out." But they said, "Oh dear." After that, I always had a radio whenever I went anywhere. Yeah, so I could always keep in touch. They used to amuse me. But they were a queer lot. They used to sing funny songs and then stop. And if you joined in, which you learnt you didn't join in the end, because all of a sudden they'd get through so many lines. "Oh, I don't want to set the world on fire" was one of them. "Just want to something," and then they get to heart and they'd stop. And then, of course, somebody go on singing, "Oh, you're around the drinks." And that, I mean, you couldn't get out of it if you did get caught. And I wouldn't play. No, that's not me. Yeah.
How was it then that you ended up in Yugoslavia?
Well, that's where we went. We carried on and on and on and on. We went across the Po. That was a thing. The Po. I mean, people don't realize, it's nearly a mile now at the mouth, the river. We just went out like that, and but we stopped there. We couldn't do anything, but a few of us, we swam out and got boats and things. You know, there's a chance to have a swim. Really, that was all it was. We got bring boats back. And but in the end, they came and built a Bailey Bridge across, and to go over there, you saw people sick when they got the other end, because it was this Bailey Bridge. But some blokes were sick, see them sick going across the Bailey Bridge. But then, of course, we carried on off up to there. Round into Anzio, went round right round the top, and went down into Anzio in
Trieste.
Pula. Went to Trieste and then down to Pula. Look at me. But I had a wonderful holiday leave on the Venice Lido, because the big gambling hall that they had on there, that was turned into a naffy. But it was a wonderful holiday to have there. Of course, you go swimming, you could do this, you had the swimming pools and everything. But the children, you go down on the beaches, it was beautiful sand all went away, and there was children there walking along. And they go along and they pick up these little crabs, crack them open and eat them just as they were. Just pop them in their mouth. They're only little things about that size, these little crabs. But the youngsters used to eat them. I never tried them myself, but there's all sorts of things like that you used to could catch in the sea. There's lots of other things, fish and everything.
When you got to Pula, Dad, what were you doing there?
Pula, now let me think, Pula. Oh, we were in a big house, massive, a hotel actually, and we were on about the fourth floor, I think, And our room was a balcony to come out, and you could come out there and look across, all across Pula. But Pula, we used to play football there, we used to play cricket.
It's such a life. What did you actually do for the war there?
Oh, nothing much. we played cricket and football, and they played a football match there. I got dragged into one of them, but the army played some local team, and that was a big holiday sort of thing. But also, there was a few people who wanted to leave, but they couldn't have it.
Didn't need it, did they?
No, they couldn't have it because they wanted it, but of course they'd been with the wrong women. I'm not kidding. There was one bloke there. He did. He got. I don't know how he got it, or he got a dose anyway, and he lost his leave home. So he went round to the Red Caps. And I'm not kidding, he cleaned the town up. He told them so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so. He told them practically all the bloody places where he'd been. And he still couldn't home. Oh, I don't know what he did finally get home, because his wife, he'd already written to his wife that it would be home. But I came home, funnily enough, but to come from there, you had to come up into front, all the way across to the bottom of Switzerland, and then come through the tunnel to come home, and then get a boat across, come across through the tunnel across front to the coast, and then a boat over. And I walked in, and they didn't know I was coming. Because I always remember when I walked in, I met one person that I knew, funnily enough, as I was walking from the station, the Southern Station, and he said, "Good God, what are you doing here?" I said, "Well, I'm home on leave. I had a month." And I walked in, and they're surprised. You couldn't let them know.
But you hadn't been back since 42, had you?
No, I hadn't been back. I hadn't been back since 42, no. I hadn't been home at all.
So
yeah, 42, yes, of course, that's when I went. No, I stayed at home. I was 3.5 years without coming home.
So it was 46 that you came back? From
46, yes, but I think it was 45 when I came home on that leave, suddenly enough. And I had to go all the way back there. But on the way back, something happened to I forget what it was, and I was in hospital, come out of the Simplon Tunnel, and in is it Milan, that's the big town there? Yeah, well, that's where I was. I was in hospital in Milan for a while.
You had a poisoned leg or something?
Yeah. I'd got something, well, I can't remember, but I couldn't come anyway.
But Europe must have been secure.
But the thing is, when I was in hospital in Milan, I got paid every day. I could never believe it. It wasn't a lot, mind you, but they used to come round every day, because eventually you could go out. But every day they came and gave you a payment. There's two or three of us used to get it regularly, I noticed. And they gave you some money. So you could, if you went out, you could add something to spend. It was weird, really. But there we are. I mean, when you think when we went out, the army paid was what, 14 shillings a week. £7 of it went to your wife, and what you did with the other £7, well, mind you could buy a lot with it, couldn't you, really? I mean,
7 shillings, not £7.
Half a pint of beer was tuppence. Packet of Woodbines was tuppence. And a ham sandwich was tuppence in the Three Tons pub in Eton. I can always remember that. And that was later on. I mean, It was, I was back at home, and it was still that price. Sixpence was marvellous. What you could do. I used to do a paper round for sixpence a day when I was at school. Used to at tailors in Eton, used to do it in Eton. Sixpence a day, 3 and 6 months a week, which my mother had most of anyway. I don't know why I gave it to her, but I didn't want it particularly, because I had other means of getting little bits and pieces.
What happened when you were demobilised then, when you returned?
Demobilised? We came home. They took everything off of us. Overcoats, everything. And we were shivering, I remember that. Even when my brother first came home from India in the army, he lost everything. He had nothing. I remember him, because I came down from... He came home early one morning, and he was sitting in what we called the little chair. It was a little chair, very low. And he was there shivering in front of the fire grate. But they took all his stuff away, all his main... And he was in kilt, sort of thing.
Where were you demobilised, Dad?
Where was I demobilised? Well, I came back from... I can't remember.
Did they bring you back from Pula, though?
They must have sent me back from Pula. Sorry. Do you know, it's queer.
You remember all that and you can't remember where you were demobilised.
Of course, demobilisation, you were sort of, it was all individual, wasn't it, really? You didn't sort of muck in with anybody. I don't, you know, it's weird, that is. So I went back to Pula, and I came up. That is a thing that, I shall have to jog my memory somewhere. I expect I've got something that will remind me somewhere. I've got a carrier bag at home, and when his two daughters were little, it was very good. We had them one day staying with us, and I thought, well, what can I do? So I just got that carrier bag out, and I said, enjoy that. Of course, it was all pictures and photographs. I've still got it, funnily enough, and all bits and pieces, and... It's surprising what you could to undo that. I mean, some of them are local photographs, but a lot of it is war stuff. And they were giggling and laughing about different things.
Well, a lot of it predates the war as well, didn't it?
Yeah. Yes, it was. Oh, it was predated by some war, yeah.
My grandmother was in service in Eaton Square in the sort of late 19th century, and I used to sit and listen to her. Something I wish you'd try and do is absolutely fascinating.
I unfortunately lost my wife last year, in December. But we lived together for 69 years, and we were caught in 4 years before that, so I had nothing to grant.
You
can't really.
Around from the Queen on 65th wedding anniversary.
Yeah. She just fell back on the bed, and that was it. I'll be quite honest with you. We were sleeping in separate rooms then, and I'd been out. I'd got a paper. I'd done something else. I'd had me breakfast. I thought, well, she's a long time coming out. I went in there, and there she was, flopped out on the bed. And the only word she said to me, she says, "I've wet myself." I've never said another word after that. So, first thing I did, I phoned him, and then I phoned an ambulance. And I think she actually lived about five or eight days. She was in hospital, but she never really came round again. It was just one of those things. But it was just old age. I mean, she was 89.